Welcome to the Thanks for Coming Soccer Show. I'm Neil Blackman with Karna Krishnire. We are going to break down the first U.S. men's national team roster since the debacle in Cuba, Trinidad and Tobago. Obviously, at the very least, Karna, the U.S. should be playing in a playoff to go to Russia. They aren't. They won't play a competitive match for 600 days.
Wow.
Your initial reaction to Dave Sarrison's roster for European champion Portugal, who they'll play Tuesday?
Yeah, there's a lot to like here. There's some things I would have done differently, and I know you and read the piece you and John and company have produced on the website. But I like the direction. I like the inclusion of a number of young players, and I think if you're going to keep some veteran players around and have them mix with the young players here, you want guys that are going to add some value. I think Danny Williams is the type of player we didn't have in the Hex. The kind of guy with some bite, an ability to kind of pick up the ball and distribute from a holding midfield position, but also throw in a tackle that we're missing. So I like the inclusion of him for sure. I like the inclusion, I guess, of Timmy Ream. I thought that Ream was going to be injured. I watched the Fulham Wolves game the other day and didn't think he would be able to make this camp. But he's a guy that if you're in a pinch and you need to play him at left back, you can play him at left back. You can play him at center back. He's a better ball-playing defender than most of the guys we have in the player pool. So Jeff Cameron's concussion issue means that Ream should be called in. And then I think calling in Dom Dwyer and Ali Bedoya both make a lot of sense to me from a tactical standpoint. I think in Bedoya you have a player who can shield the ball and hold the ball, which we sorely needed in Trinidad. Now, obviously, Bedoya was on the bench and for some reason wasn't played in that game. That's Bruce Arena has to answer for that for the rest of his life. But in the case of Dom Dwyer, he's the kind of forward. Now, he may not have been able to get you a goal, and once you fall behind 2-0, in that game, you don't necessarily put him on. But he's the kind of forward that if you start him from the beginning of a game like that, he's dropping back into midfield. He's linking up. He's giving you another guy who can hold the ball. Maybe Spring Pulisic and Altidore free on runs or Ward. Maybe if it's Ward instead of Altidore or you know, whoever Dwyer's in for. So I like the idea of bringing Dom Dwyer in. And then the rest of the squad we can talk about, the younger players. I don't like the Villafania selection. But other than that, I think I'm okay with the other 21 guys it would be, or the other 20 guys that were called in.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm with you. I think a whole lot to, sorry, there's a giant plane going overhead right now. Okay. There's a whole lot to like in terms of the direction. You know, I think the four teenagers is terrific. You know, might have even been, ended up being five if they had decided to bring in Pulisic. We can start with kind of Christian just because I don't think that Americans will. My guess is he'll play in the matches that the U.S. schedule in May, which I imagine will all be on European soil. And, you know, I would anticipate they'll play at least two matches to warm other countries up for the World Cup, maybe a third. Just to get something out of a summer. And I would imagine that Christian would be involved in those matches. But beyond that, I don't think that he'll play for the U.S. until the 2019 Gold Cup, really. What's the point? So that's kind of interesting. And then in terms of just, you know, Josh Sargent, I love because the idea of bringing him in, just to get him acclimated to what the training environment in Europe is going to be like. And he'll get to see a big stadium, which the way Bremen are playing, he might not get to see another environment like that for a while. Because I think Bremen is headed for the drop. But
Which might actually be a good thing for his development, because a season in Bundesliga 2 when he's 18, turning 19, he might get a lot of games, and that might really harden him rather than sitting the bench in Bundesliga 1.
Yeah, it really helped Bobby Wood, right?
Yes, it really did. He used to case
study there. Yeah, I mean, because there's two ways to look at that. Like, if you're in a relegation scrap, which they'll be in when he shows up, he's not going to play. But if they ultimately go down, that could be really good for his development, because usually when you're trying to get back up, managers aren't afraid to go with young guys early on and just see what they can get, and then they use a transfer window to kind of shore up with veterans to make sure that they can get up. But at least that's traditionally how it works. So that could be good. I think that's a really smart call. I know the player I think I'm most excited to see, we'll just go there, is Tyler Adams, because he's just such a class footballer. I don't think he's long for MLS. He can play multiple spots. It's just his understanding of space for his age is exceptional. His understanding of when to put in a tackle and when to hold off and how to shade positionally in defense is phenomenal. He's a brilliant passer. I mean, the U.S. has the makings of a very special midfield combination, and it's two teenagers, right? It's Adams and McKinney.
Yeah, and McKinney, I think everybody's excited to see. Nobody is surprised to see him. I think that was the first name we thought would be in the squad. In fact, probably would know more about this than me, but I believe Bruce Arena did consider calling him in for those last two qualifiers, but opted not to. The idea was to get McKinney acclimated with the teammates, because the assumption was he would be on the World Cup team. Now, of course,
right,
there's no World Cup. But that's why he was considered. It wasn't that he was going to play a role in either game, but he's a guy who is going to be a core player going forward. There were some other interesting ones. Obviously, Cameron Carter-Vickers got called in by Jurgen Klinsmann at the end of his tenure, didn't get capped. We still have to get him an official cap, and that won't happen until the 2019 Gold Cup, so that has me a little bit nervous, but it seems like his commitment is to play for the United States and not to play for England, so that's important. Matt Miazga, it's great to see him back in this camp, and he's having a great season in the Netherlands. You've reported about tell the listeners what you've reported on
the website. The main thing that I talked to Monterrey, and the main thing was that U.S. soccer was really cooperative. And the main thing wasn't even the Legia, as some have been reporting, but rather the match on the 18th is a big match against Tigres. And they were concerned that he'd missed essentially a match for the camp and then have a turnaround where he played the 14th, flew home the 15th, and could be potentially very tired for a really important match on the 18th. And it just seemed like a pretty tall thing to ask a club that's about to start the playoffs, that still has essential matches left. And so I think smartly, U.S. soccer did not alienate A, his club, and B, the player, because he is sort of a talismanic figure for them. I know Matthew Doyle compares him to Ozzy Alonso, which it's high praise. I think he's almost a little more number eight than that, but either way, he'll be involved. I don't think his commitment to the United States is in question. I think if it was, he would have gone to Chivas and not to Monterrey, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, and then he would be precluded, for all intents and purposes, from playing for the U.S. Explain, and maybe I should do this, but a lot of our listeners may not realize, when it comes to friendlies like this, there are club considerations. So the 21 you see, maybe Dave Sarakin had a 23. Jonathan Gonzalez was on that list, and maybe Jeff Cameron, who's injured now,
was
on
that list.
Yeah, or Bobby Wood, right, who had to withdraw. And there are club considerations. I think I explained this in one of our recent podcasts about Jonathan Spector and how Bob Bradley had to play a game of trading friendlies and call-ups with West Ham, because at the time West Ham was in a relegation fight, and Spectre, right. They were in a scrap every match, and Spectre was starting and playing 90 in every match at that time. And so they were, if it was a friendly or even a sub-hex qualifier, which didn't mean, which was going to be against Barbados or somebody like that, Bradley would not call him in, so that the club would then release him when he needed to be released, which were right. for friendlies before major qualifiers, friendlies before the Confederations Cup, things like that. So that there is a trade-off that goes on there. What's your take on, let me go through a couple of the players who have been called in, and then we'll talk about some of the guys who may not have been called in. What is your take? You talked about Tyler Adams. Your feeling about Kellen Acosta, who we've seen get a number of looks on this national team and not stand out maybe the way a lot of people had hoped, and Lyndon Gooch, who's hit a bit of a rough patch at a club that's just spiraling out of control at Sunderland.
Yeah, so let me start with Gooch, because I think you've kind of identified. I mean, just Sunderland has been such a vortex of bad things for American players, and it's just a vortex of bad things for most people, really, right? Unless you're Jermaine Defoe. But I think Gooch is a guy that they might want to evaluate for a position change internationally. Like, it seems to me like, you know, I know the U.S. has kind of a dearth of wide options, and you have Kenny Saif in and things of that nature that they can look at moving forward, and Kellen Rowe is another player that can play out wide. I guess they can also look at it fullback, as does Tyler Adams. But Gooch seems to me to be a guy who could play fullback internationally, just because he's really good at tracking back, and he has a lot of industry to him, and he's a pretty good crosser of the ball.
He's a very good crosser of the ball.
He's not really somebody that beats people one-on-one or in cuts with any, like, real danger, right? So, at least from what I've watched him, I mean, I try to avoid watching Sunderland.
I've watched a fair amount of Sunderland, and I think my assessment of Gooch would be, this is an American football analogy, but he's like that wide receiver. He's like T.J. Cleveland. He's a guy who runs vertical routes. And he's very, he's so fast. He's so quick. But he's not, he doesn't have the skill to kind of to cut in the way Arjen Robben does. I mean, that's obviously a pretty big example, but he doesn't have the traditional traits of a winger, and he's a guy that I think might get lost if you play him in central midfield. Now, you could play him as a number 10 or as an attacking midfield, but we've got our guy there for the next 15 years. Yeah. So, unfortunately for Gooch, the other option would be to play him where Pulisic is, and there's only one winner in that race. So.
Yeah, I mean, I look at him and I think, yeah, right. I mean, I think right back might work.
Right back might work.
And maybe it helps his career, right? I mean, like, he's still young enough where that sort of position change would be of value, but I think he does certainly add something to the U.S. From a depth perspective and just from a, you know, he's a good technical player. So, yeah. Particularly as a crosser of the ball, as he sort of fades away from Ramsey's head, I think that there's some value there.
I will say this. He is basically a quicker version of Graham Zusi.
He is, right?
Yeah, which is why he's playing in England, and he's at a club which was in the Premier League last year, and he got games before he got hurt. Was that he is? He's got the technical skill of a Zusi, but he's got the quickness, the pace, which stopped Zusi from playing in Europe.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. Then the other player you mentioned was
Acosta.
Oh, okay. John Levy, co-founder of Yanks Are Coming, writes a lot of the what to watch for from the opponent portions of the previews. John thinks this is a big camp for Kellen, and I agree. I it seems so weird to say that any camp a month after you had this colossal World Cup failure is a big camp, but for him it is, right? His stock in Europe was really high after Azteca, and then the Gold Cup was supposed to be his moment, and it wasn't.
Right. No, it wasn't at all.
And then And then he kind of spirals alongside with Dallas. They spiral out of control, and he has this kind of tilt with Oscar Pereja. And then he doesn't really play well for the United States in the autumn. He did, other than Pulisic and Bradley. and, you know, and Yedlin, sorry. Didn't mean to leave out DeAndre. And, yeah, I just think it's important. Look, they'll be there for a week. You know how this works. Some of the listeners might not. This is a really good chance for European scouts to look at American players. That's the biggest value of this camp.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Let's look at some other guys that people are talking about. We've talked about Josh Sargent. That's very exciting. It's the first time I remember a guy being called in directly from the youth club. Obviously, we know he's going to sign with Werder Bremen when he turns 18, but in February. But he is, as of now, still at St. Louis Scott Gallagher.
Right, first non-professional since Jordan Morris. And before Morris, it had been a while.
Yeah. But what is your take on Juan Agudelo? I would think that he fits into that same category as Kellen Acosta. This is a big camp. Maybe a last chance.
Yeah, it's got to be. And, you know, he's had so many last chances. And just, I mean, the technical skill has always been there, right? And it's just, I don't know, what is it? What has been the biggest problem with him beyond the obvious, which is consistency? I'm not really sure what it is. I'm not sure if it's that he lacks understanding of the game or, you know, I hate to make that sort of criticism because it's not particularly fair, but something has held him back, and he can never seem to put together more than 2 to 3 months of really quality football.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have called him in, quite honestly. I thought this was a great time to call in Haji Wright. I kind of thought that was a no-brainer, to be honest, especially because Haji's already in Europe, and because he's getting games at Sandhausen, it seemed like a really obvious decision for me, but... Juan Agudelo it is. I
mean, yeah,
thoughts on what's the problem?
With Agudelo, he's about to turn 25 this month, so we got excited about him in the same window in 2010 when he scored against South Africa. It seems like that was 7 years ago. That seems like it was 15 years ago when you're talking about this specific player. The other people who were on that squad, a guy like Mix Discourse, the guy who set him up in that game, that was his first cap as well. He's way out of the picture.
Ali Bedoya's, I think.
Right, that was Ali Bedoya's. I think Bedoya had been called up before, but that was the first, you know, really serious, we're integrating him into the first team by Bob.
Right.
Match. And then that was the game Galia Busamande got called into. And, you know, he obviously, we saw him with the Strikers here in South Florida last year, but he's way up, way, way off the radar. So there are a couple guys that I wanted to address. You just mentioned one, Haji Wright. Kenny Saif is another. Anthony Robinson for Bolton, who's been getting games, playing very well, is another.
Yeah.
A guy that we actually need to cap in a competitive match because he's eligible to play for he's also eligible to play for England. So those guys and who else?
Matthew Olasande would have been the only
one. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's another guy in England.
You know, and I think Olasande is a great example of someone you call instead of Jorge Villafania, right?
Right, yeah.
But you're going to play Portugal, and Olasande's only playing for the Manchester United reserves. So you're not really going to roll him out there on the field against Portugal, and maybe that's why Saracen called him Villafania, because at least he can put him out there on the field, and he does, in fact, have to play a game. But I still might not have done that, quite honestly. I might have just played Kellen Rowe at left back.
Yeah, you could play Kellen Rowe there. You can always play Timmy Ream there. Well, that's a tough
sure.
one.
Sure.
But you could. It's
might
one
not
match.
Go well against Portugal, but you could.
Yeah, I mean, no one's expecting to win this match. And I'm thinking you have a situation already where you probably are only going to play Yedlin for 45 minutes, right? Probably with instructions from Rafa Benitez, and that might be the case with some of these other players. It might be the case with Weston McKennie, although Who knows? Maybe it's not because it's one friendly. If you were playing two friendlies over the course of this international break, like most countries are, then there probably would be specific instructions for managers. So how about Saif? That's another guy that could have played in that role.
Yeah, I mean, just got back on the field. I understand that one a little bit more. That's a really unfortunate situation for the U.S. because I thought that's a position that the U.S. needed some help at. I think that's why Bruce Arena brought him in immediately, because he knew he needed some help, and he thought, I can get a really good evaluation of him here at the Gold Cup.
Right, and then he got hurt.
And obviously, he gets hurt immediately. He has hernia surgery. It's supposed to be, a hernia surgery is a mindless procedure most of the time, but he has complications from it and doesn't get back on the field till a week and a half ago. So I think that's understandable. I let him get reintegrated with his club. I don't know, because that's one of the clubs I didn't reach out to, as I was scrambling in the last couple of days trying to figure out who was going to be on the roster. And of course, I was late. But I didn't call them, and I should have. One club I did call was Bruges. And, it was interesting because they're happy that Ethan Horvath has his camp. They feel like he needs games, and he maybe needed to step away to get his confidence back. He just lost his starting position. They're in first, and it's not even close how in first they are. I mean, they're clearly the best team in that country, but it says something when you're that far in first and you bench your goalkeeper, right? Like, that means that there are actually some serious issues.
Yeah, that's a very bad sign, actually. That's the way
I interpret it. And this is the first rough patch that Horvath has had in Europe. So how he responds to that, I think, is super important, especially with Bill Hamid now moving over to Denmark, and you have Jesse Gonzalez in this camp. So really, this is the most interesting, probably because it's new faces, goalkeeping battle that we've had in the U.S. in years, right? Because we've just kind of always known who the goalkeeper was going to be.
Right.
So it starts now. I'm sure it will carry over into January and into the spring friendlies. I still say that Horvath is the prohibitive favorite for me. But maybe I'd remove the word prohibitive now, given what's going on at his club. But it was interesting. The assistant I talked to said, this will be good for him, just to get away.
What if Hamid goes into the Mittelan team and claims that starting job and has a good run? I think he's probably then the prohibitive favorite.
And I would agree with you. Like, I mean, and there's things about Bill's game that concern all of us, right? I mean, he's not particularly strong in his distribution, and for somebody as big and imposing and with as gregarious a personality as he has, it's shocking that he's not better at commanding his area. But that's why he had to get out of MLS, and I credit him for embracing that challenge and doing it. I credit Ben Olsen for talking to him about it and encouraging him to do it, and hopefully that happens. Because I think that if you just want the shot stopper, he's the best one. He's better than Horvath, right? But Horvath reminds me a lot of Guzan, actually. And people might shudder at that comparison. And, like, you should. Right? Guzan's a really good goalkeeper. He's not at Friedel Keller Howard level, right? And I think that Hamid has that in him, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I think he's a really good shot stopper. I don't know that he judges crosses as well as I'd like to see, and I'm not sure his distribution, which we've seen is a big part of, was a big part of Tim Howard's game, is quite up to snuff. One other name for you, Perry Kitchen. Do you think maybe he's a player who's already established himself as a guy that's going to be part of the next 4 years, and therefore we didn't need to take a look at him? Where is he in this camp?
Who's that? I'm sorry.
Perry Kitchen.
I think he's gonna play a role. There's a couple guys that didn't get into this camp, and you almost wonder if they had ushered out the whole arena staff as they should have, if this roster looks a lot different. I had no issue with Emerson Hyndman's omission, because if you can't get matches for that Bournemouth team, you're just not up
No, he's not looked particularly good in the League Cup matches he's played in.
No, it's time to come home to MLS, yeah. Emerson.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's reality.
You know, and if he doesn't, that's fine. But, you know, okay, so go to Scotland, maybe Rangers will sign him, and then at least you get those sorts of matches. But, I, you know, he's not a Premier League player. And if he's not a Premier League midfielder for a team battling relegation, I mean, and he's not one to where he's not even getting League Cup matches. So
right. So the direct comparison is with Gooch last season. Sunderland got relegated. Gooch, before he got injured, was playing regularly, whether he was
correct.
Starting or coming off the bench. And then he had an injury that kept him out until the final weeks of the season, and they had already been relegated. But that's a direct comparison, and Heinemann's not able to get on the field in that
situation. Right, I mean, Kitchen is above him for me, too.
Yeah, right.
That's a vice captain, so, at his club, right? So yeah. Anybody that can be a captain at a club that contends to play in the Champions League in Europe. And, you know, I don't belittle – some people belittle the Champions League teams from other countries. I really don't, which is why, you know, like, Sasha Kljestan's one of the most decorated players in the history of the U.S. Federation in the sense that he's played so many Champions League matches, and he has so many caps, and it's just crazy that, you know, he'll never get to play at a World Cup because of form issues.
Exactly the wrong time or a change in.
Right.
I think the Charlie Davies injury actually affected the possibility of playing him because you needed.
Sure.
For 2010, even though a completely different position. But right, he was a guy that played 34 games, if I remember the number correctly. It just sticks out because it just did for an American. 34 games in Champions League. Which is it's a crazy number when you think about how we get excited about one guy getting on the field for any random American team big club in Champions League or in Europe.
And this is why we do the show with Kardik, everyone, because he articulates these points much better than I do, which is that we get so excited that Christian Pulisic starts a Champions League match.
Correct.
Well, Sasha Kljestan started like 30 of them. Like, just because it was for Anderlecht doesn't mean that, like, that's not an accomplishment. So that's kind of why I think Perry Kitchen is a guy who will be around. I mean, this is a Europa League player. And, you know, the problem that Perry's going to have, honestly, is just depth and what's coming in, especially if Gonzalez gets integrated. I'm just not sure where they're playing, although he could play fullback, and the U.S. needs fullbacks. So we'll see. I wanted to ask you about the forwards because that, not just the Haji Wright decision, but the CJ Sapong and you know, I guess I get Don Dwyer, but I thought that CJ was a guy that they should have called in this summer.
Yeah.
And didn't. And now they're like obvious players. We talked about them on Twitter. I think Christian Ramirez and Fafa Biko, who are just in better form.
Yeah.
So it just struck me as a really odd kind of belated call.
Yeah, and I think obviously Sapong stands out as a belated call and a guy who wasn't in great form. Picol was in better form for Fafa was in better form for Philly. And then the Agudelo thing, again, I think it just must be a last chance, a last look at him. And,
right.
Assuming the U.S. is going to play with two strikers, he might start this game. We're not sure if Josh Sargent's even going to get a run out. Maybe this is about familiarizing him with the setup and with who his teammates are going to be.
Yeah, I think he'll get 20 minutes for how good he was in that World Cup, but I hear you.
Yeah, and so we're going to see Agudelo in this game. We're probably going to see Sapong, and it's it's a really interesting one. I mean, I could have seen us go ahead and just take three forwards, not take Sapong or not take Agudelo, and then you add a Perry Kitchen to the roster, or you add a Kenny Saif, even though he's coming off an injury, because they fill a need in the pool. And I think Arena, you're right. I mean, we've done a lot of bashing of Arena over the last month, but I think he knew he had a need there, and that's why he called Saif in before the Gold Cup as soon as he got his one-time switch from Israel. And unfortunately, he got injured.
Yeah.
He might have been the guy starting the qualifier in TNT otherwise.
He very well could have been. A couple of players that I wanted to kind of get into a little bit. I know that Justin Glad is maybe the MLS omission that bothered me the most.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, I just don't understand, especially given the scouts' presence at these camps. And you know, that kind of goes for Danilo Acosta too, but more for Glad for me. You know, I don't know. You would be better to speak to why Palmer Brown isn't in the camp, probably.
Yeah, that's another
your connections to Manchester City. But I'm surprised that Glad is not here, and it quite honestly doesn't really make much sense.
No, I don't think the Justin Glad admission makes much sense. The Palmer Brown one doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I thought maybe the camp would be good for him to maintain fitness before he starts playing in January. I've been told he's probably going to be sent on loan to NAC Breda, which is the former club of Ernie Stewart in Holland. That's what my Man City sources are telling me. So he's going to be playing on the European continent. And right now he has no other way of keeping fit. The other one was Walker Zimmerman, quite frankly. I thought maybe he deserves a look.
Another shot.
Yeah, just one more look for him. And we could still have the Matt Hedges conversation. I mean, I don't think the sample size was large enough on him to write him off, but his age is working against him, whereas a guy like Glad...
He has so much range, Kardik.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy, right? Like, and so he's a guy that... That's interesting to me because he's a guy I think that is done, and it's all the team's fault for not qualifying. Because he's a guy you look really hard at when you're thinking about your 23-man roster.
Yes.
Just because, he's one of the few guys, I remember I sent a couple tweets, it was probably last year during the MLS playoffs, and I was just like, wow, that's an international center back, and everybody was like, I don't know, and I was like, he might be better internationally than in MLS because he's just so rangy.
Well, that's my feeling about Eric Palmer Brown, actually, since we just mentioned him. I think he's going to end up being a better international. He's been better at the U20 level than he was in MLS. I think he's going to be better as an international for the full national team than he will be as a club player because he's rangy, because he can play the ball, because he also has a certain vocal leadership skill that is needed at the international level that you know, and it's funny. I mean, we're talking. I guess we're now in love with that kind of center back: Beisler, Hedges, Palmer Brown, Glad. They all have a kind of similar playing style.
Yeah. No. I mean, no. It's true. And you know, to some extent, John Brooks, although he has all the other stuff.
Right. Now, I guess this might be the place to wrap up. If John Brooks doesn't get injured, the U.S. is almost certainly in the World Cup. So it's small margins, but it's that sort of thing, building depth so that next...
Yeah, Brooks and squad rotations, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've heard a number of people say that today, basically. Well, you know, if Brooks gets fit now, gosh, if he'd been fit a month ago, we wouldn't be having any of these conversations. It's probably true, right?
He missed both sets. You know,
it's no coincidence we had 4 points in four games, four qualifiers after Brooks got injured.
It's important to remember he missed both sets.
Yeah.
It's also important to remember while talking about the what if on John Brooks that Bruce Arena didn't rotate his team.
Right.
And that's why I parked on the Doya thing today, because we can close by just, you know, admitting our geographic bias.
Right. Which I also is reflected in my analysis of Dom. I mean,
yeah, no, of course,
and of Dax McCarty, who's not in the, who probably won't be called up again. But
no, that's,
you know, all these Florida players.
And, look, Ali's going to get to wear the armband against Portugal, and he deserves it. And anyone thinks that he doesn't, you can at me on Twitter at NW Blackman. You can at Kardik on Twitter, KKFla737. I mean, hit us up because. If you saw what I saw in Cuba on the U.S. bench, where it was literally Brad Guzan and Ali Bedoya that seemed emotionally invested, and Jeff Cameron too, but in that different way, in that like sulky, brooding, you know, language I'm not going to use on the podcast way. But Bedoya is going to manage, I think, if he wants. But he's calling switches. He's pointing out open people. He's pointing out open space. You know, he's like dying with every play, and it was really sad that he wasn't given the opportunity to start that game. And, you know, maybe this is sort of Sarcin's way of saying, look, we get it. But everybody, coaches, players, everybody respects him. And, you know, they're going to need one, two, to three, to maybe even as many as four veterans around this team in the next couple of years. People are going to hate that one of them is going to be Michael Bradley, but one of them is going to be Michael Bradley. I think another one's going to be Ali Bedoya, and then you kind of go from there.
Yeah, and based on this call-up, this squad, Danny Williams, who's a guy who's been a minute from major tournaments, it looks like he's probably going to be one of them, because at least in Sarakin's assessment, now, of course, he's probably not going to be on the staff, but in his assessment, you know, you've got a guy who's playing regularly in the Premier League. You got to call him in. And even at his age, that would be interesting if you got another full cycle out of Williams. It's possible.
Yeah, he's really, he's a very fit player. He's the kind of guy that could stick around. He'd be 34 in Qatar. It's pretty old.
Yeah.
Not as old as Ream would be. That's 35, right? So.
Right. But Jermaine Jones, was in the World Cup at what, 32,
33? Yeah. We forgot DeMarcus Beasley. He'll obviously be in everybody's plans for
Qatar. But, yeah, so we'll be back with you soon. We're going to be talking USSF election, and obviously we'll wrap up this international break after the match in Portugal, which is on Tuesday, 3:45 p.m. Eastern on FS1 on Tuesday.
And we're going to get, real quick, we're going to get predictions on the CONCACAF playoff. So we'll start with Carrick. Do you think that the Cacarachos will be headed to Russia, or will it be the Ruse?
Wow. I just brooded over this. I can't remember if it was Sunday night or last night. Well, Sunday night was the playoff game, so it must have been last night. I was just staring at Pinto's selection, thinking this team is not good enough to win over these two legs. But I'm not going to bet against Pinto. I'm not going to bet against CONCACAF. We're homers here. I'm pulling for Honduras, and I'm going to say Honduras is going to get through this.
I think that, much to the chagrin of the Houston Dynamo, Albert Feliz and Ronald Chiesa are the difference. I think Honduras will win. I think they get two goals in the home leg to erase the one goal deficit they'll have.
And you think Elise gets one of those goals?
I think Elise gets one of those goals, and I'm going to say Kyoto gets an assist on one of those goals. And while that's happening, Seattle waltzes into the MLS Cup.
And keep in mind that Carlo Costa, former Houston Dynamo player, Houston has got this great connection to Honduras, three Dynamo players on this squad, and obviously Costa, a former Dynamo player, he has been called in. I think, I'm not sure he's around next summer. He's there to try and get them through these two legs, and they might turn the page on him after.
Yeah, no, I think Pinto would like to turn the page, although Costa is one of those guys that he just... The thing about Pinto is that he really values, like, at his core, he's big on, you know, who's your leader? Who's the guy in the locker room that everybody will listen to? And I think it's one of the reasons that him and Celso Borges had such a good rapport. It's because Brian Ruiz was one of those guys who gets rattled when things aren't going right. And Celso Borges is not that guy. Costa is so the kind of rock. Like, he's seen everything.
Yeah, so, Carlos Pavon was a similar guy previously for Honduras that got the play to a very, very advanced age with the national team. And
right, that's Maynor Figueroa is in the team.
Yeah, and, so Maynor Figueroa is in this team. Roger Espinoza is not.
Yeah.
Maynor is an interesting one because he's a guy that's seen everything. You know, his last run out, obviously MLS is a little different than the Premier League. His last run out in the Premier League a few years ago, he looked just so off the pace. But
terrible. Right.
In CONCACAF, he's been he's still solid. So yeah, I think maybe this is a little bit of homerism, but I think we're both thinking Honduras is going to get through this, and Australia has a lot of question marks. Even if they qualify, what they're going to do with their coach and with their squad? This has been a very, very Australia has had the same experience in this qualifying campaign. We'll just close on this because I think the parallel is incredible with us. Same kind of experience we had in qualifying, the same sort of arrogance they entered qualifying with, the same sort of entitlement, and they've been humbled, and they the only reason they're even in the playoff now is they have a guy named Timmy Cahill, who at 37 still can produce magic like he has throughout his career. But Australia has some very, very serious soul-searching like we're going through now. It probably starts for them a week from now.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because Pinto kind of made the parallel and said, you know, look, they don't have a dynamo like Pulisic. He's like, right. But they do have a Clint. He said, but they do have a Clint Dempsey.
Yes.
And it was, you know, yeah, Pinto's so smart. I think that we're basically giving away our home to him.
Yeah.
On that, but yeah, I mean, you basically, you know, and that's therein lies the difference, right? Like, the U.S. is not in the playoff because of a lot of things, but Clint Dempsey hit a post, Tim Cahill didn't. So,
right, and I think the other thing, obviously, is that Aaron Moy is in the prime of his career, whereas the U.S. has guys who are either at the back end or at the front end of their careers. And Moy is a guy that could be a difference maker for Australia, but I'm going to go with Honduras.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I really like Elise. I think he's not long for MLS. I think he could actually be maybe one of the best Honduran players ever.
Yeah, the Timbers wish he hadn't been this long for MLS. We can leave it at that. It's a good place to close out the show to our friends and family.
All right, thanks everybody.